revenge.
Clytemnestra stood back to admire herself in the long plaque of polished bronze that served as her mirror. This new long gown of emerald green and gold suited her well, she believed, brought out the little chips of green in her eyes. She could hear Aegisthus's voice in the council chamber, raised in anger against his chamberlain. Fond of her husband as she was, she wished he could regulate his temper. Shouting at the upper servants was undignified. Even as she smoothed the fabric down, she saw in reflection the poor chamberlain, red-faced and shaking, pass by behind her. Not a minute passed after that, but the wretched man had returned and was bowing before her.
"Your pardon, Majesty, a visitor at the gate who would have words with you."
Clytemnestra raised an eyebrow. "Why do you bother me with visitors at the gate?"
"It is Menander, ma'am."
"Menander? Do I know a Menander?"
"If it please your Majesty, he used to be a tutor to your... to the Prince Orestes and Princess Electra, ma'am, before the... that is to say, when..."
Clytemnestra's lips curled into a smile. "Yes, yes, yes, I remember him. Does he say why he wants to speak with me?"
"He says he bears news, ma'am."
"He may approach." Clytemnestra slid a golden comb into her hair and waited until she could see in the mirror the chamberlain escorting the visitor into her presence. She turned with a faint smile. Menander knelt, and the chamberlain backed awkwardly out. Clytemnestra examined her nails and allowed a silence to fall.
"Well, Master Menander," she said at last, "it has been a time. Let me see. 7 years, I think."
"7 years, Majesty,"
mumbled the tutor.
"7 years since you and your ugly wife removed my children from this palace. No, you needn't snivel and grovel. You did King Aegisthus and me a great favour. 3 fewer mouths to feed. What do you want with us now?"
"I bring sad news, my queen. Your son Orestes, he has passed into the underworld."
"Orestes? Dead? How?"
"An accident while hunting, I believe, Majesty. A representative from the court at Phocis is on his way to bring you the ashes and tell you more of it. It is my understanding that the Princess Electra travels with the embassy."
"You may leave us. My compliments to your wife. Arsinoe, I think her name was. Still ugly?"
"Oh, ugly as you like, ma'am. Ugly as 10 toads."
"Very well, you needn't sound so pleased about it."
No, ma'am."
When he was gone, Clytemnestra called for Aegisthus and told him the good news. They lifted their heads and whispered thanks to heaven. The fear that Orestes was alive and growing to manhood had occupied their minds for some time. Any day he might raise an army to seize back the throne that he doubtless considered his.
"We are safe, my love," cried Aegisthus. "The gods are good to us."
After lunch, he went to his chambers to do who knew what, to sharpen his sword blades and spear tips, count his gold, drink wine. She never knew what he got up to. She was settling to her loom when the chamberlain appeared before her once more.
"The Princess Electra and her delegation, your Majesty."
And there, suddenly before her, was the daughter of her blood, Electra. She was beautiful. She was lustrous. She had flashing eyes and very determined lips. Clytemnestra rose. "My dear daughter, you are welcome." Behind her were 2 young men, both with very set faces. One was carrying a jar. "I am only here to bring you the ashes of my brother, Orestes." Clytemnestra indicated a table behind her. You may set them down there. Tell me, my dear, how did the poor boy meet his end? Clytemnestra did not notice that the young man carrying the jar, after leaving it on the table as instructed, had slipped out of the room. He went out one morning with a hunting party, Electra began. Clytemnestra's guess as to what Aegisthus got up to in his rooms was not far off the mark. He did like to whet the blades of his weapons. He did like to count his gold. He did very much enjoy cups of strong wine. His attention today was on an animal hide chart of his residences, however. Besides the great palace, he had halls and castles up and down the entire length of the Peloponnese. He had felt for some time that his properties in Arcadia were insufficiently grand for his status, and was taking much pleasure in drawing up plans for a whole new complex of royal buildings. He became aware of a presence in the room.
"Can't you see I'm busy?"
he grunted without looking up. "Apologies, Your Majesty. I thought you would want to see me." Aegisthus looked up. A young man with a sword in his belt. "Oh, you're the delegation from King Strophius. Yes, yes, bad business, my stepson. What happened, exactly?" "Well, Your Majesty," the young man looked around the room. He was out on the lower slopes of Parnassus. A wild boar had been marauding around the villages there, so we all gathered for a hunt. Quite casually, the young man plucked a spear from the wall. "Prince Orestes, he had his spear, you see, held it in his hand like this, and suddenly—" With one swift movement, the tip was at Aegisthus's throat. "What the hell?" "And suddenly, Prince Orestes was in Mycenae, standing before the bastard son of a mongrel bitch who conspired to kill his father, the greatest king that ever lived." Aegisthus's eyes nearly popped out of his head. "You! In the name of Apollo, I claim my revenge!" Orestes thrust. The spear burst through the flesh of Aegisthus's neck. A fountain of blood sprayed out. Orestes pressed harder, and the tip pushed through into the chair behind Aegisthus, pinning him. He shuddered and thrashed, and was still. Clytemnestra leaned forward, an expression of great sympathy and sorrow on her face. "So this boar, this wild boar—" "Like the Caledonian boar itself, it was," said Electra. "He had no chance."
"And it killed Orestes?"
"No, mother. Orestes killed it." Clytemnestra spun around. Orestes came forward. She saw a spray of scarlet on his tunic. "Yes, I thrust a spear through the vile old boar then, just as I did now." "Aegisthus!" Despite herself, Clytemnestra cried out in pain. "And now you, mother," said Electra, "you too have to pay for what you did to my father."
"You would not! You dare not! Your own blood!"
"You massacred my father. We saw
you do it! We saw you crawl up behind him. He had your sister Iphigenia killed. How can such a crime rest unatoned? And he dared come to my house with that Trojan whore. He was Agamemnon, king of men."
Electra was on her feet. She pointed a finger at Clytemnestra.
"He was worth 1,000 of you, and you killed him. Do it, Orestes! Do it!"
Orestes had drawn the sword from his belt and brought it up to point at his mother, but it shook in his grip.
I'm not sure I...
Pylades came up beside him and put a hand on his shoulder.
Apollo ordered it. The command could not have been plainer. When was an oracle ever so clear? Orestes, you must! My son, you cannot! You...
But Orestes could. He pushed the point of his sword into her stomach. She screamed. Electra took out a dagger and rained down her own blows. Pylades watched and mumbled a prayer. Electra laughed and shouted with joy.
My father's soul is avenged!
Orestes fell to his knees, sobbing. He put his hands to his head. Pylades squatted down to comfort him, but Orestes stood and pushed him aside.
What have I done? What have I done?
You have obeyed the oracle. You have righted a great wrong. Orestes shook his head.
Then why? Then why are they here?
Electra and Pylades exchanged glances.
They? Who?
Can't you see them? There they are! There!
Orestes stabbed the empty air around him.